Yeah.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Don, now this is a bit unusual today because for various reasons which we don't need to explain, we're going to speak to two people. One of them is an ex-footballer and is just, what are you doing? Oh my God. I don't know. You better speak, seeing as you've touched it. Speak into the microphone.
It'll be all right.
One of them is an ex-footballer, played for the Western Bulldogs, in fact played in a premiership for the Western Bulldogs, and is now just embarking on a fledgling career as a boxer, and he's sitting right opposite me now. His name is Clay Smith. And here comes Michael Zarafa, who's out the back. So this is just, I could tell you that this was going to happen. You said, well, we'll interview Clay first.
Now you hold the fort while I let Michael Zarafa in. He looks a bit lost out there.
Yeah, you go and so we were going to speak to Michael Zarafa and then he said he couldn't come in, so then we got Clay to come in and then Michael said he could come in, so we're going to have to explain all this on air when he comes in and he'll wonder what's going on. So oh my God. Here we go. Now, I'm just explaining. Will we start this again or not? Come over here, Michael.
All right, that seems
all right. Now, sit down here, Michael.
Talk to me.
So, when you said... where are we? When you said, Michael, that you couldn't come in till a certain time, then I thought, well, if you weren't coming in, we'd get Clay to come in. And then you said you could come in, so we're very glad you've come in. But there's two of you. We're going to interview both of you. So that's the only reason, if you're wondering. Don, now look, speak to Clay about just what you were going to ask him about his transition from football and ask him why he's doing that.
Well, I'd like to first ask him, you know, you wore number 14. That takes me back to my days when I played against, it was called Footscray in those days. I don't know why they changed their name to the Western Bulldogs. Do you know any history about number 14, who wore it prior to you back in the 60s?
I never went back that far, I don't think.
Well, John Schultz, who was a Brownlow medalist.
Yeah, I remember Schultz.
Okay, and the next, when he retired, Barry Round, another Brownlow medalist, wore number 14, and he was a combatant of ours. So I remember number 14, and you inherited that number.
Schultz, he still come down to the rooms a fair bit when I was there. So,
Barry's now up in Queensland, but he comes down each grand final. But they're both Brownlow medalists. One when he was playing at Footscray, and the other when he was at Sydney Swans.
Yeah.
So there's a bit of history with number 14, the number you had.
Well, I didn't quite get a Brownlow, but Premiership couple after that.
Well, you did better with the Premiership because that's what it's all about, and those two didn't. I think Schultzy played in the 61 Premiership side, Grand Final side, but they didn't win a Premiership. So you've got one up on them.
Yes. So just so Michael Zarafa is not sitting here listening to you interview Clay, we're going to intersperse and we'll come back to both of them. So welcome, Michael. Thank you very much for coming in. Now, speaking to the microphone.
Thanks for having me, brother.
Please,
it's good to be back.
And now, we did speak to Michael, Clay, when I think Mick Gatto got you on the phone for us after the fight against Tim Zhu bit the dust due to COVID or something, and then there was a bit of controversy about why you weren't fighting him, and all that went backwards and forwards. Is that ever going to, just before we get on to your career and where you're headed, is that ever going to take place, or is that over and done with now, the fight against Tim Zhu?
Well, now that we've moved to number two in the world, our phones are ringing now.
Now, say that again.
Number two in the world, yeah.
You?
Yeah. Number two.
You're number two in the world in what division?
Middleweight division, yeah.
And so does that automatically make you have to challenge someone?
Or well, now I'm mandatory to fight number one for the IBF world title.
Then that's a vacant title at the moment,
correct,
isn't it?
Yeah, because Triple G, Gennady Golovkin's relinquishing it to fight Canelo Alvarez, which now leaves the belt vacant for me and number one to fight.
So that last fight you had, did that elevate you up the ladder
huge.
or the rankings?
Yeah, huge, because it was an IBF.
So where did you come from?
Well, I was always top 10, because I fought some high-quality fighters, but this was an IBF World Title Eliminator. So I moved, no matter where I was, the winner moved straight to number two in the world and gets a world title shot. And I had a tough boy in front of me. He was undefeated in fighting combat sports. You know, he was come from the UFC and the MMA. And then he was 15 and I was as a professional boxer.
Are they as skilled as what you guys are, the MMA?
Yeah. Well, everyone has their intake. So I personally don't think they are, because they're very square. And, you know, they're a lot tougher than boxers, I think, because they're used to getting kicked in the head and elbowed. But, he was a big boy. He was strong. But I knew there was levels that I've been to that he hasn't reached. And, you know, showed on the night, you know, a pretty early knockout in the second round. So now I move
it's
on
good
for
to watch, I tell you.
Yeah,
I was there watching.
Clay, that's right. Speaking of that, that's right. We want to hear what you say.
No, it was a great fight topic. Actually organised some tickets
for you
to come,
watch
you.
You
went
so.
And saw it?
Yeah, no, it was real good.
Crazy.
So just on that, Clay, you've decided to you've had one fight.
Yeah, just one amateur fight. Come out of footy and put on a bit of weight. And
so you came out of footy, injury?
2018, yeah. Three ACLs, three clean-outs. Yes. So six surgeries on my right knee. And
you thought you still want to be in the competitive aspect of physical combat, and what better way?
Yeah, well, I had to get something to scratch that itch. And
Are you any good? Is he any good? Have you seen him fight?
I haven't seen him fight, but I have heard that he can throw. So
I don't mind getting hit. I'm going to try not to get hit as much. But it's a great sport. It is. You've got to be disciplined. You've got to be dedicated. And you've got to be committed to it. Otherwise, you get shown up. So I've definitely put in the work this camp, and I started a bit early. I had a bit of weight that I had to lose, but. Just
and who did you fight? I should know this, but who did you fight to start with? And who are you fighting next?
Chris French is a bloke that I fought in my first one.
Yes.
And this time around.
We accounted for Chris, did we?
Yeah, we accounted for him. Yeah. I was a main event. It was like a 8-week gym challenge.
Yeah, I see.
So
yeah.
I headed that up, and then 3 2-minute rounds with no headgear, and then this one will be the same. So
how's your knee going to stand up?
It's my back foot, so it's not too bad. Try and put most.
Do you have to strap it when you go into the ring?
My ligament's still together. It's just I got arthritis, so it's just bone on bone sort of. But it's more.
So how do you do road work?
Hey,
do you do running?
Yeah, I try and do a little bit. It's one pace and straight line, pretty much. It's more the agility and high end speed that forced me out of footy. You got to hit 12, 14 Ks in a training session or a game and change direction and tackle and,
So were you being tackled when you did your knee, or was it just to change the direction?
The last one, I was on a pre-season camp, just changed direction and ended up tearing a bit of my cartilage and meniscus and had another clean out, which they told me I'd be back in probably 2 to 3 weeks. And then 7 months later, I still never joined the main group. So, yeah.
All right, now I'm just swinging over to Michael again, Donald. So you've had some great victories, but you've been knocked out
once in my career.
I'm only reading off the thing here. So when we played footy, we got belted from pillar to post, and we always came back and did it. How do you overcome that? Or are you always reticent, or not fearful as in scared, but fearful that it might happen again, or it's all part of the program?
No, look, I just go in there knowing that that is a possibility, that you are going to get potentially knocked out. But I train hard. Like, I train 2-3 times a day.
Yep.
I put in 12-week camps. And I know once all the hard work's done, it is what it is. It's in God's hands. And all I can do is go there and give my absolute all, and if it's not enough, it's not enough. We go back to the drawing board. But every time I step through those ropes, I want to kill the guy that's in front of me.
Yeah.
You know, there's a switch that flicks, and I just turn on, yeah.
So if you're ranked second in the division?
Middleweight, IBF.
IBF.
Is that all? Is that
that other, is a huge.
How do you go as far as the other
so
IBF,
number,
WBF or whatever?
WBA. So I'm number 3 in the WBA, number 2 in the IBF, 1 in Australia, and pound for pound, 6 in the world. So the guys in front of me are pretty scary. But, I mean, that's, yeah, like Gennady Golovkin, Jamal Charlo, they're the guys that are in front of me, you know, Canelo Alvarez.
How many fights can you have a year, do you think?
When I was younger, like, I was having 3-4 a year. But now at this level, I've had 35 fights. I've boxed over 400 professional rounds. And I think maybe two fights a year is enough. You know, yeah.
How long's the preparation for two fights?
At this level, I do a good 12, 15 weeks. But I'm always fit. Like, I never have a day off. You know, literally the next morning of my fight, I was up doing the road work, 8Ks in the bank, you know, and so, straight back in the gym.
So, Michael, you said the people ahead of you are pretty scary. Yeah. Is the adrenaline rush of finding people who are scary, is that what motivates you?
Yeah, like, just knowing that.
I mean, I couldn't imagine stepping into a ring and...
Well, it'd be motivation of failure, wouldn't it? Wouldn't you be motivated by the fact that you don't want to fail?
Look, I've got a good mind. Like, I work closely with a sports psych, and I just mentally prepare so well, you know, and I just literally say to myself, it is what it is. And I've learned my biggest, you know, achievements have come from my losses. So, like, the four losses that I've had against four world champions. I've learned, and bigger things have come from that, you know, like, I fought, beat Jeff Horn, and then I lost in that rematch.
Yeah,
I knocked Jeff Horn out, and then I truly believe I got stitched in that rematch, but, you know, it is what it is. And then, you know, I got the Cal Brook fight in England, and I fought in Vegas against the world champion there, and obviously beating the Anthony Mundine, my idol, you know, like, everything came from that, and from my loss now I got this world title opportunity. So I just tell myself, you know, like I said, it is what it is. Like, I'm in the ring, I've got to fight 12 three-minute rounds. What's the worst that can happen? I'm not scared of getting scratched, getting stitches, getting dropped. That doesn't fear me. You know, like, losing, you've got to lose to grow.
So, Clay, Michael said, I'm not sure if he said this, but the nervous energy when you've... Can you correlate the nervousness playing in a grand final when you run onto the ground with 18 people is just getting into a ring and looking at the bloke across you? Are the nerves the same or they're a little bit different?
Yeah, pretty similar. It's a bit more lonely in the ring in boxing.
Yes,
you don't have any teammates. Or you have your team on the sideline, but they can't get in and help you out. I was more nervous for the grand final, I think, than my first fight.
Were you?
Yeah. Well, it was a pretty big occasion, the grand final. We hadn't won one for 62 years.
Unfortunately, I can't tell you what it's like to play in a grand final, but Don can.
So, but that was amazing. Playing in front of 100,000 people was something I'll never forget. But I definitely had nervous energy going into the fight, but like excited energy. Like it was a thrill. When you walk down that race and you got your song playing and you step in there and every single person in there is looking at you and one other bloke trying to knock each other's head off, That's a good feeling.
And is that the feel? That's just on a few scales up, Michael. That's the same with you. You're there on your own, mate.
100%. Yeah, I couldn't imagine what it's like playing in front of 100,000 people. I thought my biggest crowd was 25,000. That was pretty scary. But I know I've always been a fighter. Like, I don't fear. It's like getting up, going to work. You know, I used to be a chippy. I have the same energy as I was to going to work. I just get in the ring and I've trained for this. So it's just like, you know. It is what it is.
So that we think we trained hard when we did it, Don. Probably the...
Well, it's a different fitness. Absolutely. Would that be right, Clay?
100%. Boxing has always got me the quickest, the fittest. It's next level. It works everything, your whole body. I played at 85 kilos. I'm down to 80 now. I started my camp at 90, but I had a bit extra loose. But this is the lightest I've been since I was probably 17, I think. So it's a different fitness.
How's your base with regard to the skills required in boxing? I don't know, you can tell me, were you boxing when you were playing? Did you box when you were young? Did you learn the basic skills or you've only just picked those up?
Done a little bit. So Will Tomlinson, he used to come from Bandsellers, so his trainer back in the day was Paul Turk, Carroll. And we used to train with him just in pre-season for footy. Back in
Bairnsdale. What's this when you're under 17s?
Oh, probably younger, probably under 15, 16s. Just in pre-season, we'd go in, we'd train, hit the pads, do a bit of sparring, run, just for some pre-season work. And then when I was up here playing for the Dogs, we used to have the gym coach come in, do some boxing there, but I also used to go to the gym in Yarraville and train with Gareth and Lim Jekka there. So I've done a little bit. I've always liked the sport. I always liked the fitness from the sport. So something that I've always been accompanied with, but never fought in the ring before due to footy.
Is that enough, Michael? What Clay's done, is that enough as far as a foundation for boxing goes?
I'm a big believer in the road work. I think I run a lot too much, but like I said,
I'm talking about the skills with his hands.
Oh, well, personally, I haven't actually seen him fight, but yeah, like I said, every fight you'll learn and get better. And
how old were you when you started the skills of boxing?
I started boxing at 7 years old. I mean, I had no idea what was going on, but my first fight as an amateur was 13, 14 years old. But I mean, look, I couldn't fight. I just had the heart, and I think that's what's gotten me to where I've gotten. Man, I've
Do other boxers start at your age, like Clay's coming in at an older age?
Look, everyone comes at a different age, but he's coming from another sport at a high level. If he was coming from a local, football club and, trying to make it to the top, I'd probably question it. But he's played at an elite level, so his fitness and his strength wouldn't have an issue, and their coordination, I find a lot of the AFL players and footballers and stuff like that, their coordination is pretty good.
So then you get someone like, what's his name? Fury? What's his name? Tyson. He's relatively new to boxing, isn't he?
He's
boxing all his life.
He's been boxing all his life.
Yeah,
absolutely champion. I think he's bare knuckles, wasn't he?
He's done it all, but amazing. Yeah, he's, I was
Why
lucky
is he amazing?
Because he's 6 foot nine, he weighs about.
The speed that he has.
Do you reckon he's fast?
For a heavyweight,
For his weight and his size, the way he moves on his feet, picks his punches, works.
Do you think he's very fit?
He boxes smart, and that's the thing, that's the difference. It's not about fitness. I can be in the ring and be in places where I can't get hit. It's in the pockets, and that's experience. And Tyson Fury, he's overcome so much adversity with his life, mental health, drugs and all that stuff. And to come back and win a world title the way he did, I find him phenomenal. He's an athlete, yeah.
Clay, this is not an inquisition, but our thing says that you suffered from depression after the football, and it said you turned to alcohol and drugs.
Gambling. I hit rock bottom. I come out of footy.
Because you couldn't play football anymore?
Everything that I'd done my whole life taken away from me. It's like I'd played footy since I was five. That's all I knew. I played basketball as well, but got to the top level, played it. I went through so many hard days with three ACLs. Yep. It was pretty much half my career. Got back and played in the grand final and felt the highest of highs. And then within a year, got footy taken away from me.
Because of the injury?
Because of the injuries, yeah.
And then you sort of almost threw the towel in a bit and thought you got frustrated with yourself and... you're a great example of overcoming adversity because here you are speaking to us and you've got a new vocation, a new interest in life, but you found solace in having a drink and taking
some
think drugs.
It was just trying to mask the pain.
Yep.
I definitely didn't do the right thing. I should have got help a lot sooner than what I did and not put so many people close to me through the shit that I put them through.
If you had your time again... If you had your time again, it's all very wise talking like this, would you approach it differently, your football and your life?
I wouldn't approach footy any differently. The way I played footy is what made me the player I was, the way I attacked the footy.
I'm not saying that. I'm talking about, you've got to have those attributes to play football. Yeah. But would you have had more in your life than just football?
Tough question. It's been involved with my life, I think it's a great place to be around for families, friends, good culture, brings people together. So I think whether I played at a high level, the highest level or not, I still would have been involved with the footy club at a lower level and still enjoyed it just as much. I love the game. It wasn't about the money and what I was getting paid. I played footy because I love the game.
This is the question I am leading on to when we spoke earlier about mental illness. A lot of players... in AFL now come out with this thing called, they're on the list, mental illness. And that you don't go any further and don't ask any more questions. But I reckon there's an underlying thing, and I think it's called drugs. I find it difficult to relate to mental illness having played the sport. To me, that should be an outlet for mental anxiety or any type of anxiety. You can get out and run and do whatever you like. Do you think guys coming out now under the system that you're in, and I know a few other fellows that are kind of searching a bit as well, you know, you're a full-time professional and then you're just thrown out?
Yeah, it definitely, sometimes if it's not when you expect it to be, you can get tossed out or changed over pretty quick. And if you haven't done anything while you're still playing to set yourself up for when you leave, it can be a rude shock. And it's a different world. Like Michael knows, he's training for boxing and going into the gym. That's his job. For us, it was going in, kicking a footy and doing that. But when you don't have the sport or what you're doing as a job, like I'm going back to work after this podcast today. I'm working 6:30 in the morning to 5 o'clock at night and then going to train tonight at the gym. So it's a different world and it's one that I had to adjust to. But yeah, some people.
Well, Michael said before that he was a chippy. So when his boxing finishes, obviously you'd go back to chippy.
I set myself up. I'm a building inspector now, so I've kind of.
Well, you've gone further. Yeah, so yeah. You've got another string to your bow.
Yeah. I was a little bit smarter, but. But like I said, I've gone through the same thing, you know, like you're at the top 1 minute. In boxing is when you win, everyone wants to know you. When you lose the next day, your changing rooms are pretty dead quiet. And I've gone through the same
thing. But that builds character, doesn't it?
100%. You know, I was lucky enough that, you know, I didn't get as bad as some people in terms of obviously the drugs and the alcohol and stuff like that. But, yeah, it's a lonely world. And, you know, it's getting more and more often with athletes. But
what's that, the drugs or the depression?
Just both, you know, and like he was saying, you know, because 1 minute you're here and then next minute if you haven't set yourself up, you don't know any different, you know, especially you're playing your whole life, 5 years old, you know, 7 years old box, and then it's like, well, see you later, now there's a new up-and-coming kid or there's a new AFL player or whatever it may be, you know, it's like, what about me? What about my whole career I've just given back? So for me, I was smart enough, like I did set myself up a little bit, so I have a career outside of boxing. And, you know, I've got a good team at the moment now and I'm just focusing solely on boxing. And but like I said, the money obviously is great now. It's starting to come and, you know, I can just enjoy life a little bit more. But
So when you look at Tyson Fury, like Donnie's probably the – no one can hold a candle to him, but he turned to the drugs and then I think he's a God botherer, isn't he?
He's
very religious, so he's had a crack at everything to try and. I wanted to ask you this: you being the second-rated middleweight in the IBF, the next fight you have must be seeing as you do this for a living, must be a reasonable payday for you, guaranteed a reasonable payday, surely.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
What does that mean exactly?
Well, like it goes on beyond millions, you know, and.
So if you lose, you still earn...
Yeah, win, lose or draw, you get the same amount. You sign a contract prior to the fight of whatever the purse may be, and then obviously winning elevates you to that next, you know...
Gives you a chance to have another fight and earn some more money.
Yeah, but you make all the money in pay-per-views, and now I'm back on main event. I'm a main event fighter now, and, you know, you get anywhere between 25% pay-per-view, and like I said, me and Tim Zoo are the biggest fight at the moment, so that fight alone will get 200,000 pay-per-views at $69. So 25% of that's not a bad cut. Yep. But you get anywhere between.
How much are you losing tax?
I've got to find a new system because it's pretty high.
Back when we were playing, and I don't know whether the tax review laws, I'm not in that situation anymore, but we were trying to average our income like farmers over 7 years. Yep. You know, you'd have your big year. Farmers were back in those days. I don't know if the laws changed at all. I'm not in that category anymore. But you could average. Can you average your income over a certain period of time?
It doesn't because one fight you might get 100 grand. Next fight you're getting a million. You know what I mean? So
but over in 2 years' time you mightn't be getting anything. So can you average that couple of million over 7 years? So you divide it by a million by seven, and then you get taxed on that.
Well, I've never looked into that, but that's definitely something I might have to start doing.
So that is actually an interesting question because. You got to have someone who manages you and handles you, and not going to dudge you for a start. Like the big bloke with the fuzzy hair, what's his name?
Don King.
Don King, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's if you can trust someone to look after you, then just leave you to do the fighting. That's a hell of a help, isn't it? Surely?
Yeah, 100%. Well, I've got a good team. I truly trust in my team, and I've kept my circles pretty small. You know, climbing the ranks, there was a lot of I call them backslappers that were just there and, you know, hitting you on the back and, oh, yeah, all this and all that. But now my circle's pretty small and, you know, I can't complain. You know, I'm in a grass, comfortable position. I'm in Australian boxing. I'm the king at the moment, you know, and I've come past all the adversity with the whole Tim Zhu staff.
So I was just going to say, Zhu's up there. How do you classify yourself as the king?
Well, I get a world title shot. So he's still waiting for that to come through where I've got it guaranteed. So, you know, I'm number one in Australia in my division, number two in the world, getting my world title shot. He's still waiting, you know what I mean? So in the rankings, I'm ahead of him. And it's the fight Australia wants to see. You know, Zarafa, yeah. Zhu is the new Mundine Green. Yeah. And we want that fight. Well, I'm not. We don't, like I said, I fought bigger names and worse conditions for less money. So, Tim Zhu, like I said, I'm happy to fight that. You know, I said to him, call my management, let's make it happen.
But it was going to happen because that's how we came to speak to you the first time on the phone. It bit the dust because of some COVID restrictions and they couldn't all bring their handlers down or something.
Well, there was just a contract that was delivered 10 weeks prior. Which we signed for, you know, A, B and C were promised and then a week out they weren't delivered. And at a fight at that, you know, gratitude and as big as it was, you know, they weren't going to fly my team in and, you know, there was just so much things behind the scenes that we were like, well, mate, because of the pandemic, if it's we can't do it on this day, do you want to postpone it? And then they said, well, Zarafa's pulled out of the fight and they've found somebody else. But that was never the case. And everyone believes what they hear and see. And, you know, but credit to Tim. Him and the team are doing great things. No Limits doing great things. Fox Sport are doing great things. You know, I'm not here to put anyone down, you know, but what was promised and what was delivered were two different things.
Clay, can I ask Clay a question? Clay, in your last game, you went back on the ground. You did your knee.
Yeah, St Kilda.
Yeah. Now, how bad was it? Did you have pain when you did it initially? Because I'm going to lead to something.
I knew I'd done something, haven't done two previously.
Were you in much pain?
No, not much pain at all. So Bob Murph just chipped the ball down the sideline to me and I sort of hyperextended it. I come to the bench and just said, oh, you might want to have a look at it. I think I might have done something. So I went down to the rooms, did the test and they told me I'd done my ACL. They knew that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I could still... The strength in my leg from all my rehab, my quads, my
hammies, yeah.
Everything
yeah.
was that strong. I could still run and change direction. And I just said to him, I said, look, I've got 1 year left in my contract. I don't know if I'm ever going to get a chance to run back out on the ground with these boys again. So I said, as long as I can still run, I said, I'm going back out there.
Shit.
So they told me, well...
Did you get it strapped?
No.
No.
The ligament was snapped, so...
It was snapped and yeah. There was no pain?
No. Well, it was an artificial one. It was one of the previous.
Oh, I see.
So I'd already had two hamstring grafts that had been grafted into an ACL. So I went back out and it was not until late in the second where I got fatigued. And once you start to get fatigued and your muscles start to get tired, that's when that gave way. And I just went to go back with the flight and change direction. And that's when I twisted it and collapsed and then it hurt. That hurt. Yeah.
So what did you do? Pull more ligaments?
No, I think it was just more bone bruising and maybe some cartilage and meniscus.
So that was an artificial ligament they put in and what it tore away from the...
They cut a strand out of your hamstring and they sew it on or whatever they do inside, but that becomes your new ACL. So I started with the right hamstring, went to the left and then... For the third Rico, I went to a quads tendon.
So what about you, Michael, with injuries? Boxing is, whether you like it or not, is the epitome of what sport's about. You've got to be fit. You've got to be able to hit someone. You've got to be able to move.
You can't run.
Yeah. You've got to be able to evade. It is probably the supreme test of sport, whether people like boxing or not. And to that end, if you got anything wrong with you, mate, what injuries have you had that have you've had to cope with?
Nothing
overcome?
As bad as that. I mean, I've broke my hands. I've had over 200 stitches in my face. Broke my nose.
You broke your hand punch.
Fighting? Yeah. I've got it still broken now. I don't know if you can see it.
Is it? Yeah, I can see. I can see that. It's from punching someone.
Yeah. I cracked him in the head, and it just snapped then and there, and I was like, crap. But
this was in a fight, obviously.
Yeah. Straight in the fight.
So how did you fare from then on?
Well, I come back to the corner and I was just using my jab for the rest of that round and it felt like there was a blowtorch in my glove And I think it was like...
I think I remember.
Yeah.
And they thought there was something wrong with you.
Yeah. And I was just picking him off with my jab. Correct, yeah. And then I just said, you know what? I bit the tongue and I just threw the right hand. And two rounds later, and I caught him with the only right hand I threw after that. And I knocked him out. So.
You're joking. With the quick hand.
Who was that? I remember that.
It was a guy from overseas, a tough Argentinian undefeated. But yeah, I just bit the bullet and I said, you know what? I'm going to throw it. And it did hurt, but I landed and it finished the fight, and I was like, thank God. But
was his name?
That the throat that cut the glove, off my hand, and it was
what was the name of that boy?
How long did it take you to recover?
Normal break. I mean, 8 weeks.
Was that all?
Yeah, just
so passing. You didn't hit it. You just use your, from the time you felt the pain.
Yep.
You just used your left. You never used your right, and then with just one punch.
Yeah, went two rounds. I was about the third or fourth round. I broke it, and then I was just jabbing, and I was getting caught obviously because I had no defense. I couldn't use my hand. I was trying to catch a punch, and then I survived just with the toughness, and I threw the right hand two rounds later, and it caught him.
So what about the? What about the shock and the grief of I know you fought or you were sparring with Dwight Ritchie, he collapsed and actually died after. How did you overcome the fact that you did that to someone? Not your fault, but how did you overcome that? The fact that the person you haven't overcome with that.
I never will.
No.
Never will.
So how do you ignore that, Michael, when you thinking, could this possibly happen again?
Look, that was one of the hardest things I've had to do in my life. Me and Dwight were training partners since we were 14. We fought each other in the amateurs. We sparred endless rounds, thousands, leading into our camp. And yeah, just that day, he wasn't right. There was something wrong with him. And we got in the ring and we were 4 or 5 rounds, and he just something was wrong with him, and then he just stopped, and then I hit him with the right hand and he just collapsed, and he died then and there. And it was tough. Like, we tried to, I took my glove, my whole team, his team jumped in, we tried to give him mouth to mouth, and yeah, the ambulance came, and they come to me and said, where's Mick? And they said, mate, you know, he's dead. And you know, it's the hardest thing I had to do. Like, I still think about it, you know, literally the next morning.
So you still think about it, Michael.
Of course.
Does it affect your 1% when you get into a ring? You think, does it something in the back of your mind think, oh, I couldn't cope with this again? Or you just got to ignore it?
I just try to, not think about it like that. I try, when I'm in the gym, I don't really think about it. It's when I'm, you know, doing the road work and stuff, I just think back to the sad time that it brought, and just, you know, the strength that I've got to try to build moving forward. But I wouldn't wish that upon anybody, what I had to go through. It's even facing the family. I just felt like I was responsible for it, you know, and it wasn't, you know, they ruled that he had other underlying issues, but, you know, to see it then and there, you know, I've never seen someone die, you know, like, and it was the worst. And, you know, he was saying to me, like, help, and I just couldn't. And it was, it was tough.
Clay, you mentioned before about you're now working and you've got to go to training tonight. Do you think that AFL football, you've done two things now, do you think you need to be fully professional, you know, to the extent that they are now in AFL football, is that that's all they do now? You've got a balance, you're working and you're now going off to train at night.
I definitely
Do you think you can do the two things at AFL level?
No. For the standard you want that you get on TV every week, there's a whole lot of work that goes into it, getting the boys' bodies right, the vision and stuff they go through, the recovery, the meetings. There's a lot that goes into it. You get a fair bit of downtime, but there's no way.
Do you think they overdo? Well, you just mentioned meetings, for example. You got Michael over here who says, I learned from my losses. Do you think that you guys could, you know, be a little more self-sufficient and learn from your mistakes, or you're critical of yourself and say, shit, I got done here, I could do this or I could do that, instead of, you know, going and attending these meetings?
I love learning. Like, for me, I don't say I love failing, but I just...
You learn from it.
I always just take I love learning in general. So, like, even if a five-year-old says something that I didn't know, I'll take that on board, you know.
But do you think that could be transferred over into football, that you take more responsibility for yourselves?
Yeah, I think so. But the game's evolving every year. Every team you play every week is different, and you have to prepare for different things. You've got to do things differently to combat what they do. There's a whole lot that goes into it. Probably a little bit different to your day, but there is downtime. But the boys do things outside of football. They're studying part time. They're doing their uni courses over, say, 7 or 10 years instead of 3 or 4.
But what about the few people that are not that academically gifted to do uni courses?
So I was doing one day a week as a Sparky. I did a year working with youth and homeless kids as a mentor. I did my PT course while I was there. So they do push you to do things outside of football so that the transition is easier. Some boys probably don't jump at that opportunity as much as what they should. But there's some boys that come out with double degrees. Boys are lucky enough to be on the list for 14, 15 years. But, yeah, there is some boys that come out fairly well off.
So, Michael, it's okay to get in the ring and be good at what you do, but how far have you taken this? Do you have a psychologist? Do you have a nutritionist? Do you have someone who advises you what diet to have? How far do you take your profession in the aim to be number one in the business?
For me, it's weird, I'm probably the only fighter that does this, but I just wing it.
Yes.
You know, I can never plan for the unknown. Like, I don't know what the outcome's going to be and stuff like that. So I just go with learning how I've not gotten forward, you know what I mean, like from my failures. But
reflex and instinct.
Yeah.
I just learn
off that, you know, and I just, everybody's different.
And what
about
your fitness and your diet? What?
My diet's pretty shocking, I'm not going to lie. Yeah, I mean, I'm a big sweet tooth. I mean, I'm not a big,
But you can burn that off.
That's what I mean. I love my sugars, love my sweets. I'm human. I'm like a big kid when it comes to that. But when I know I've got a big fight, you know, and when it's to tighten the screws, I'll do it, you know. But if I'm 10 weeks out, you know, a bit of chocolate doesn't harm me. But four weeks for me is where I'm like fully switched on. I'll weigh my food, make sure everything's right.
Now, what about your family backing? I know your dad's Maltese.
Correct, yeah.
And your mum's Australian. he's crazy, is he?
Oh, mate, they're good. You know, they're tough love. Me and my dad, we tough love. And
Has he come to the fights?
Yeah, he's never missed one. Yeah, he picks me up by putting me down. That's how he is, you know. So it's been tough. You know, we just come from a normal family. My mum absolutely hates the sport. She's like everyone's mum. She wanted me to be a model, I guess. But she reckons I've aged her 30 years, you know, just from being in the crowd, and she can't do anything. You know, I guess I'm her baby and she just hates watching it.
What age are you, Mike?
I'm 30 now.
So a male is at his optimum strength between 28 and 30. If you reflect on your course, on your career, are you hitting harder or are you stronger now than what 100%. You were when you were 18, 19?
100%. Everyone gets it wrong. Everyone's like, you know, he's had 35 fights, he's old, he's past his best, but I was young and dumb. Now I've matured, I've hit my peak now, and the penny's dropped for me. You know, less is more. And it showed in my last fight. You know, he was this bigger puncher, 15 kilos heavier, undefeated, you know, the next big thing.
Did you say 15 kilos heavier?
He weighed in at 84 that
yeah,
day.
Yeah,
yeah.
I was 73 and a half, yeah.
Yeah, but he had to come back down to what, 77?
Same, so did I. We couldn't go over. Yeah. And the next, that night.
That amazed me as well. He weighed in 72 kilos.
Huge.
You just had three weigh-ins, yeah?
Two.
Yeah. He was 72. The next morning, he had an Instagram story. He was 84 kilos.
Yeah.
That's 12 kilos in 24
my
hours.
My maths isn't the best, but 12, yeah.
Crazy.
So, and that's what I mean. Like,
how can you do that? That's impossible.
I've heard of boxers cutting weight and... But that's something crazy.
Yeah, I've never done. For me, I'm naturally a 66 kilo fighter, 69 kilo. So I've gone up because in my earlier career, I was obviously defeating everyone in those divisions. So I kept climbing up the divisions. And when I had the Jeff Horn win, obviously I was a middleweight, and I was highly world ranked there. But yeah, I can't put on. I weigh in at 72 kilos. I go max 74. You know, because I'm just naturally not that big. And these guys.
Well, how can he get rid of, how can he do that?
He loses. Well, I reckon he's. Well, he walks around 90 when he's sparring and stuff. 10 weeks out, he's like 90 kilos. Like the what? First press conference, he was 90 kilos.
That's crazy.
And I saw him. We went face to face, and I was like, my first instinct was like, shit, this bloke's huge. You know, I was like, fuck. But I knew the skills pay the bills, and that, I'm a big believer in that. Skills pay the bills.
Yeah, but I'm talking about him. How does he get rid of so much?
I have no idea. No idea, yeah. But he does it. He just does it. And everyone said to me, like, Brian, the fighter, like, man, just be careful because he gets big. He's a big boy, you know, he walks. He's a light heavyweight. He got knocked out by a junior middleweight.
And now, what about your family? You got a, I don't mean this in any disrespect, you got a functional family,
got a
dad and your mum.
Family, if you call it full functioning.
Well, that's right. They
We are a family, yeah.
I got
mum and dad and two brothers.
And they come along to the fights.
Yes. Where are you from, Clay?
From Bairnsdale, down in East Gippsland.
Yeah, I know
So, got mum and dad, got both my brothers, and got three little nieces now. Just welcomed my latest one last Thursday, actually, Georgia Grace. So, mum is not a fan of the fighting, no.
A bit like Michael's mum.
The partner's not a fan of the fighting, but I don't think the dad and the brothers mind it. But it's just something, it's a thing that I get enjoyment out of, gives me purpose. So I think they agree with me doing it for that purpose of it, brings me happiness. So I'm a better person for training and doing the work that I do.
So it's a bit hard to, after one fight and one win, it's a bit hard to see what the future is. But if you keep going, progressing, where does it take you?
I don't know. I'm just going to, like, I have full faith in the boys out at the gym. I've just started training out with Team Alicet there. Probably 3 months ago when I started, and absolutely loving it. Ty and Topic and all the team out there, they're awesome. And they've worked with some of the best, and they know what they're doing. And I'm loving the training. I've got to get through this one first and make sure I'm doing the right thing, and then we'll sit down and have a chat from there.
How many rounds is it?
3 twos. And then we'll see where it goes from there. They're talking about maybe doing something similar to what Gallen's doing and maybe going to... 4 twos or something like that, or 6 twos. But look, I've got full faith in them and what they want to do. But I think I'm going to stick with it for a fair while. So
it's a bit of a different mindset. 3 twos to
12 threes.
Yeah. 12 threes. Yeah. Seriously, I know you're trying to belt the living suitcase out of someone from round one, but there's a time when you see, like Muhammad Ali lies on the ropes and hopes someone will punch themselves out. There's fair tactics to last, I reckon.
100%. It's all about setting up the punches. And like even my last fight last week, I already knew that fight wasn't going to go the distance after the first 30 seconds. And
Why is that?
Because just he kept making the same mistakes. So like every time I was, you know, checking the hook, Or throwing the jab, he kept dropping that right hand and he kept stepping the wrong way. And
so you assessed that after
30 seconds.
The corner didn't have to advise you, you just smart enough.
I went back in the corner, and if you could hear it, I wish they had volume there. I said, "This fight, I'm going to stop this guy early. It's not going the distance." I didn't even hear what he said about the fight.
Okay, so somebody's technically correct.
Yep.
What do you say? Shit, I'm in for a big night here.
Yeah, well, yeah. Something like when I fought Cal Brook, you know, a different level, but... Again, everything I had, he had answers for, and it's like, crap, you know, you got to reassess and try different game plans and set things up. It's like a game of chess, you know, each piece, each punch, you know, it leads to something else, you know, the next shot. But every time I kept throwing the same stuff, and if you watch the fight, it didn't go long, but it was exactly the same thing I kept doing. A jab and I kept moving that way, jab kept moving that way, and he kept making the same mistake.
This is your last week. Fight, yeah.
And I said to my trainer, goes, mate, come back with that left hook. It's all over. I didn't think it was going to be the first one I threw. But I knew it wasn't going to go the distance. I said, we're done. I said the same thing with Jeff Warren too.
So you had, I presume, great respect for Kell Brook. I think you lost on a unanimous decision.
Yeah.
You have no problem with that decision?
Nah, look, he won fair and square. Yeah. He's probably my only loss out of the four, because the other three I got robbed. But credit to Cal Brook, he's the best in the world, and out of his 40 odd fights, only two have gone the distance, and I'm one of them. So, and he's fought the best in the world. So, I mean, I learned so much from that fight. And
how many blokes are hungry? There's a thing is, you know, a hungry fighter is a good fighter. You too, Clay. I suppose you're on the way up, and you're hungry. How do you stay hungry?
I don't believe in that, to be honest.
You don't?
I just got a goal, and it's just like, you know what, it's I just have this thing where it
What's
is...
What's your goal?
Be a world champion.
What happens when you're world champion?
I defend it as long as I can.
So you'll still be hungry, you think?
Pride, Donald, I reckon.
Yeah, well, this is what I'm trying to get to.
Right. Yeah, look,
because a lot of them seem to drop the ball.
Look, for me, I'm looking forward to what's after boxing. You know, I've had a good career, and for me, it's like I'll win a world title, defend as long as I can, and I don't want to be like, you know, Anthony Mundine, who I absolutely love, but stay in the sport for that long. You know, Sam Solomon, again, who I absolutely love, but. You know, I feel like they should have retired by now. You know, they've given a lot to the sport.
Even Horn, you said you beat. I thought he wasn't as hungry. He was hungry when he first won it off Pacquiao.
Yeah.
But I just thought the edge had gone off him a bit.
Yeah, like the hungry, I don't know. Like you should, if you're participating in the sport, you should want to be there, you know, and fight. Because if your mind's not in it, you can get hurt. It's not like other sports, you know, like boxing. If for a second you've taken your mind off the prize.
I don't think it matters what sport you are.
Yeah, like,
you've
got
to be hungry all the time.
Yeah.
No matter what the sport.
If you're not 100% in.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, you're going to get hurt, you know, like.
Okay, so Clay, where are we next? What's the next fight you've got?
May 14th.
May 14th?
Yeah, so at the Melbourne Pavilion.
Yeah.
Main event against Luke Packham. So.
Who's Luke Packham?
He's on the block in Love Island, I'm pretty sure. I didn't actually catch those.
He
fought on the last one.
Yes.
Had a
look at his, just checked him out anything?
I haven't had a look. Listen to the trainers, that's about it. But it's more about what I do.
Okay, and that's a, that you get nice stipend, you get a nice payday for that, or not really?
Yeah, I get a little bit. No millions or anything like that, but he's worked his ass off to get to where he is, and this is still an amateur fight, and so you're not normally making money.
So you're May 14 whatsoever. At the Pavilion out in Flemington Road there, whatever it's called. Yeah. And what about you, Michael?
At the moment, our teams are in negotiation with top-ranked promotions from overseas, so we're sealing the deal with the Brazilian. And look, maybe September, October, we'll fight 12 rounds for the IBF world title.
And you won't
here or over there?
He's happy to come here.
Fight before then?
I don't want to risk anything. No. You know, I said to my trainer, we don't need it. We've had 35 fights. Yeah. You know, I don't need to prove anything or get any ring rust out. You know,
I'm not asking you your financial position, but you've done well out of it.
My first fight was $200. And if you fight or do anything for money, I feel like you just don't reach your full potential.
Yep.
Or, for the right reason.
Yeah, you're not doing it for the right reason. So for me, I just love the sport. I've always boxed since I was 7, and eventually it paid off. And yeah, look, financially, I'm pretty comfortable. I'm not going to.
Well, Don, we'd try and do this tandem because of circumstances. So I hope the boys. no, that's okay. Don has to go. I hope it. Came across I hope you're satisfied with us doing it in dual interview. Clay Smith and Michael Zarafa, thank you very much for coming in to You Cannot Be Serious. We have quite a lot of people listen to this, so we hope you get something out of it, and moreover, we get something out of it. So thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Right.
Because you ain't treating me right. Come back again. I'm just